Can you all hear this? I'm very close here, but see in the back? Okay. I'll start with a poem from my first book, Jazztown. This is called Burnout. The firemen found two jellied children in the ground floor bedroom, clinging to each other as though freezing, Siamese twins in death. Walls had echoed the cacophonies of flame through which the parents had escaped. The upstairs windows, smashed, had let them live, like ghosts already. During the 90s and some of the 2000s, noughties, I wrote approximately two books by mistake. And so Salmon published the book with all the love poems in it, and Blazebox did all the other stuff. So I'm going to read some of all the other stuff. It's called A Shopping Mall on Mars. And this poem is called Empire Diner. Muhammad sauntered in and ordered peace. Jehovah rumbled in and ordered love. Jesus Christ strode in and ordered hope. Confucius wandered in and ordered brotherhood. Gandhi shuffled in and ordered, with a tiny smirk, Western civilization. The Buddha floated in and ordered everything and nothing. Then a special ops brigade, crashing through the windows, ordered everybody on the floor. The soldiers opened fire, killing one wise man, one prince of time, a godhead and three prophets, a waitress in uniform suspected of collaborating with the old regime, and a burger-flipping alien who had threatened them with a spatula. And this is the title poem, A Shopping Mall on Mars. Out beneath the auspices of Deimos, lovers tease each other's lips in pressurized Buckminster tents. They're waiting for the dust to settle. Then they'll venture back to where the habitation billows to recover from a long day at the hydroponics factory. Once they'd have imagined this, gliding in the sky above Utopia Phoenicia, engineers in shuttlecraft repairing Aztec plating on the Starship Enterprise, gripped within the scaffolds of a skeletal low-orbit yard. But now, no one remembers them, those pulpish dreams redundant in a place where Wells's tripod-born unsympathetic eyes are dead, where vast and cool intelligences open a church and shopping mall. Some years ago, a singer whose work I liked, and Grant McLennan, who was in a band called The Go-Betweens, died of a heart attack, so I wrote a poem in his memory. And the title comes from a line of one of his songs. It's called To a House of Tin and Timber. Grant McLennan, dead at 48, a heart attack in bed in his hometown. That evening's party now become a wake. Songs are strewn around him like invisible petals, roses for lyrics, lilies for notes. The chorus comes later, a sound that reaches back into the earth to bloom again in someone else's ears, but never heard the same as when he sang, I recall a schoolboy coming home. And this one isn't autobiographical, it's called Drone. Put your feet down in the iron sea. Allow the silt to sift between your toes. Watch out for crabs and sharp sea stones. Let your legs float free, lie back into the arms of Mother Ocean. Take your head out of the sky and through the membrane where it meets the water's ever-changing surfaces. Listen with your inner ear. Your heartbeat in this underworld sounds not from deep inside yourself, but from the deep itself. A pounding in the water like the sonic boom in air, each hit a signal that you've swum below the range of human hearing. You've dived darker than the eye allows the measurement of light. Now, let water take you on beyond the limit of the tide, farther than the shelf and its old ossifying forms, past the point where nature fuses atoms into molecules. go into the true deep, to that place where latitude and longitude diverge, where life is not to be contained. In these uncharted depths, where sea has slipped coordinates, your body is a bottle, and your memory is a message that may find a breaker of its code. I will go now to the shore and watch you take on water. I will wait and watch for your return, as seahorse or an enemy, or as a vile drowning, a deliverer of the world. I realize I mispronounced anemone. Anyway.
Anemone,
yes. This book here had all the love poems in it, and that got confusing a bit, because it was written over a period of 13 years, and they're not all about the same people. But I thought, you know, that's an interesting experiment, took them all in the same book, which sounds cold. And this poem's called Summer of Love, Volume 1. Their first weekend, he loaded the stereo with batteries and tilted it on the back seat. While she drove, they played a selection of music cassettes, Ella Fitzgerald, Marianne Faithfull, a trove of golden oldie records, Melanie Sings, The Rolling Stones, Mama Cass was dreaming. She took them west in her old car, past Edgeworthstown where she'd been born, through Longford where her parents ran a guest house, onto Oughterard for painted candles from De Lacy's. How privileged she felt to be with her, downing warm Guinness in Nocton's, counting strange seashells washed up on the shore, taking the salt of the incoming air like seasoning on their kisses, tongues bunched up in their mouths like mollusks. And this poem's called Cobain. You had driven west to put geography between yourself and my bleak humours. I was stunned by news, received in solitude. Cobain had pulled a trigger on himself, the pills and whiskey incident, a dress rehearsal rag. Now, his wife and daughter desolate, his mother had proclaimed her son a member of that stupid club. I'd only known his music, but I'd heard his double-barreled blow inside my skull as morning light rays, April harsh, attempted trepanation on my head to disperse the airs that seeped into my lobes and threatened bad demeanor meningitis. I announced it to the first poor soul I found, a shop hand who stared innocently blank, his digits probed like a checkout laser beam. That night, a black-clad teenage acolyte congregated at the cross in Phoenix Park. I kept internal vigil for a love that, limping, had been put to sleep like some lame horse who faced the hypodermic and the pasture of the dark, a kind of virtual euthanasia. We had buried it still breathing. Suddenly, the world had flattened wide without a rough guide to the heart, an atlas of the spinal cord, a root map of the nervous system. And this poem, I always have to explain that it was written in 1999, 2000-ish, because it's set in the restaurant at the top of the World Trade Center, which is a really eerie thing to go to New York now and point to the sky and say, I had cocktails there. And Windows on the World is the name of the restaurant and the poem. High above a passing bird, I sank a Gibson cocktail. I was bloodless from a perforated heart and wanted something to replace the squandered fluid. Felt the lure of mental illness just the other side of that too solid window I could catapult. But madness seemed like tiger balm, despair like acupuncture. So I watched the evening terminator trailing blinking lights along the night-devouring island to the twilight-loving park. Up here, my local drinking buddy, getting over someone too, was drawing street plans on a napkin. She was down there in those canyons, he said, breaking hearts and traffic lights, accepting serenades from stunned New Yorkers and their girlfriends. Then, I think we drank a toast to her and raised a glass in praise of feeling low. And the next one is one of those poems you read afterwards, years afterwards, and you go, I must have been insane to write this. Anyway, I think I probably was. It's called I Loved You Here. It made him smile, her face when it returned without her body on the bottom of her chin. You can burn and tear and throw them in the trash, she told him then, but some will not stay dead. He'd snapped one day a year before, removed what she had left behind, the postcard, horsed, pee horsed, that she had written in his that she had hidden in his pillowcase. I loved you here, an eyebrow pencil, cursive on the back. The woman in her corsetry unbound. He bawled her letters, burnt the lock of hair she'd inhaled to compensate for lack of her. The smoke became her ghost. Her emails he erased for all their suicidal tenderness and casual demands for neat shampoo you could not get aboard. He threw away the books she'd given. Walker Percy, Annie Dillard, H.R. Giger, James Agee. Her taste had been impeccable, and probably still was. He found a note inside the fridge. I loved you here, or hereabouts. The kitchen at whose table they had dined on one another. He discarded all discovered relics but her silken headscarf that he'd accidentally laundered so it held her stench no longer. Then the photographs, the ones in frames he left until he burnt the others in their pockets, quickly, without looking, dropping them aflame into a cooking pot and slapping down the lid, switching off the mains in case the fire alarm would carry their death wail upon the air, and when their wisps had been absorbed, he let the ashes sail into the street. He took her portraits from the walls and stuck a bread knife in their backs and prized the pictures out. He stuffed the frames into the bin. He made confetti of the prints. One year on, her face came back, or part of it. He smiled as though he'd recently learned how. The use of his lips almost fully restored, as after a long-ago crash. Now the pictures he destroyed were in his head. He was the frame. For all of those sections of time that contained a mere segment of her face, he had never captured her, had never understood that it takes two to make a photograph, that the shooter must focus on another lest he look into himself and recognize the image he's become. Sunlit in the burn with a purple car behind her, I loved you here. Wearing his green woolen jumper in Paris, I loved you here. Holding her nose as they forded at Halfpenny Bridge, I loved you here. And this one is called Scene of Tranquility. He came home from the party. In his pocket was the satin star he plucked from decorations. He woke his daughter, not yet 4 years old. He took her, drowsing, out into the road. He pointed at the sky, the gap between Orion's shoulder blades. You see that space above the clouds? I got a great long ladder, laid the top rung on the moon, and caught this star. But now I give to you. And this one's set in Paris, so it's kind of made up-y, but it's interesting. It's called Rain. Once, after a bout of heavy rain, I walked the streets of Paris for the kick of catching lovers kissing in their doors. There were none that I could find. Maybe in this town the act of kissing fell through the shade of grain and glass. I searched for clues. A woman testing perfumes in Samaritan hovered over atomized chrysanthemums, then walked into a cloud, the ghostly molecules attracting still, though flowers and their bees were long deceased. Maybe in this town the act of dying cloaks you in a shade of love and scent. Outside, a pregnant woman, with a pit bull like a ball and chain, gave her dog a toilet break upon a sapling pushing through the stone, then tugged on him as though he were a human child, and dog pissed lemonade. Maybe in this town the act of loving cloaks you in a shade of hope and pain. An old man wearing better clothes than mine, appearing casually spiritual and godless in the same small frown, watched a younger man and woman intimate their mutual claim with hands dug deep inside each other's pockets as they promenaded. Maybe in this town the act of yearning cloaks you in a shade of blues and death. The cinemas in Montparnasse were showing English language tales of love in the original American. I did not feel like following the titles, so So I went in search of raindrops still intact upon the paving stones. Maybe in this town the act of falling cloaks you in a shade of air and speed. I mean, all these love poems are crashing into each other now. I think that's quite strange to be reading, because we're moving on to somebody else entirely now. This is called Eidolon, and that's kind of a ghost creature thing. Eidolon. Years go by, and all your loves devolve into a composite, passing on time's travelator, gliding to a terminal, never to be seen again, and you watch from security, frisked as though this stood for sex, this stood for intimate. Ghosts, and you are ignorant of exorcism rites. Whenever you're entangled in some temporary angel, comes the shadow of another love, a flicker of a dimple, or the first arrested syllable of laughter soft as promises. You meet her in departures after half a decade lost, and it's no longer her, but her extrapolated. Someone calls her over, time to make the plane, and flings a prophylactic glance at you, you melancholy resonant. This one's called Cicatrice. You did not see mine on the first night we met. You were occupied, putting your hand through my window, not feeling the pain, bleeding your wrist on invisible shards as you opened a frame just to crack for some air, letting autumn leaves in from the fingers of trees. At some point we made love, or a bungled attempt. By the morning your blood had congealed. Wounded and practical, no broken bird, you tried often to show me how two falling leaves might collide in the rain on a current and sail as one leaf. In the end, winter rattled us loose. Now and then, subtle scars raise a sign on my skin that you left more in me than I ever let on. And enough of the love poems, this is the last one. It's called Tunisia, Winter 1998. Tonight, in moonlight, your pellucid skin is gleaming as a silent movie star's, open lips caressed by playful rays. Between the jet-black comma of your hair and the Berber blanket's fringe that frame your beautiful face like a still. Your complexion is so clear as to be luminous as moonlight itself on the crown of a nimbus. In weeks, all we'll have of each other is desert, a couple of jars filled with camel ride sounds. Now, I watch over your dreaming, secure for the moment, unsleeping but drowsy, my bare arm exposed at the edge of the bed that is furthest away from your body. By the time the mosquito, proboscis drawn in, is aware of your breath, she'll have taken her fill. Just move on to a bunch of poems from the next book, which is out in October. It's called The Darwin Vampires. And you can pre-order, isn't it? SalmonPoetry.com, which is nice. The Darwin Vampire is the title poem. Being loath to sink in at your neck, they prefer to drink between your toes. They revel in the feet. They especially enjoy those places in between, where microbial kingdoms, overthrown with a pessary, render needle-toothed injuries invisible, where any trace of ingress lost in the fold is conspicuous, as they themselves in daylight are, by its absence. You will hardly notice that small sting, might not miss a drop until the moment that the very last is drained. And when you're six beneath the topsoil, you will never rise to join them. Rather, you will be a hint, a fluctuating butterfly, a taste regret on someone's tongue, a sudden tinted droplet in the iris of a fading smile, a blush upon a woman's rose, a broken vein in someone's eyelid, always 1 degree below what's needed to be warm. That one's dedicated to Catherine, but I didn't write it for her. she saw it, and my then girlfriend said, "That's lovely. Can I have that?" And I said, "Yeah."
We dedicate it to every one. The poem kept in reserve, never published, so you can't
This one's called Hidradenitis Suppurativa.
What?
I'll go back. Hidradenitis Suppurativa. It's a disease.
Sounds like
it.
Yes.
Okay. Subcutaneous for months. A jet of pus and blood arced across the room from a swelling in my thigh. The same stain persisted on the wall. I had shot the house with an anti-decoration gun the size of a year. Counting backwards on the table, breathing in a blackout, seconds later coming to, having mislaid a whole morning. On television in the ward, an astronaut returned 3 decades from the moon recalled the effect on his marriage of discovering unforeseen meaning in the word anticlimax. A nurse brought a limp tuna sandwich. The bread was a poultice, ready to draw the dead fish back to life. I picked up my stitched, bandaged groin. Under the bondage of gauze, surgical thread, like trainee barbed wire, puckered the lips of the wound, making it kiss itself better. And you'll be glad to know I got all those love poems out of my system, so there are very few in the new book. This one's about giving up smoking, and it's something anyone who has tried probably has struggled with. This one's called Hit. 4 a.m. The stores are closed. I need a cigarette. The chest infection jangling like some urn expectant spirit of my future emphysema grumbles, "You could live without them." But I hate the thought. I hate the garden, too, out there all sparkly with its night sweat of a dew fall and the bloody silver flowers in the rhinestone brittle moonlight. It looks better in the dark, I give it that. But then a grin. The last time I gave up, about 5 hours ago, I left a pair. I left them in the garbage. What I've come to, what the hell. I go down to the basement where I listen for the shadows to tell me I can screw myself. They're silent, which I take as frigid welcome. I slip into a moonbeam that illuminates the garbage bag I'm looking for. I kneel, a genuflecting idiot. I rip a hole in this black, putrid tabernacle of tobacco. I plunge my arm in there and grope. There's something slimy. Holy cow. I rummage in it anyway. The slickness on my forearm makes me think of gynecology. A dead tin on whose lid I nearly ripped my fingertips, then, bingo. It's all damp. I flip it open, finger cigarettes inside. I grab the box and pull my arm away. A rat's tail licks my knuckle. Christ. Thrown back, I fall upon my ass and nearly break it into pebbles as the jolt of living contact jumps my neurons all at once like meat pinball. The rat ignores my panic, squeals ahead inside the trash. I see him blurred and scurrying. That rodent, damn him, knows he is the future. Quietly, I send him hate. I get up, take the stairs. I slam and lock the basement door. I breathe. My friends don't know I smoke. They think I gave up years ago. At least I think they do. I sit and smile and watch the box with tiny mutant rats. When all is clear, I reach inside and take a cigarette. I stick it in my mouth. The taste of mold and mattresses, but I no longer want to kill the world. And hey, the garden doesn't look so bad. I go to get the matches, but I'm out. This one's called Skywalker Country, and Skywalker Officer. I'm sure you all know who Skywalker is. Luke Skywalker. It was a long time ago. The boy was out on the bog with a ruddy neighbor, a man strawberry faced from years of hidden anger and pious disgust at every foreign thing. Although he brought a radio he tolerated for the Gaelic, he remained dismissive of transmissions from abroad. Now while the neighbour passed remarks and fed on bacon sandwiches and hearkened to the news hour in the Angelus, the boy piled up a rick for grown-ups to bring later in their trucks. The day wore on. another program started, Star Wars from the NPR. This was no Hog, but Tatooine. And to a man for whom Drumchamba was too far, Mos Eisley was unthinkable. American muck, he said, and turned it off. He urged the boy to pray and save himself as well as turf. And this one here is about, you know, the way where the world is heating up and we're all really in a lot of trouble. This is called 4 degrees. Clouds of mirrors in orbit turn the face of the sun away from the Amazon desert, the lost city of Barcelona, the lost city of Mumbai, the lost city of New York. The submerged hulls of the Sydney Opera House, like an experimental cruiser seen from below an inverted waterline. The lost city of Berlin, the lost city of Cape Town, the lost city of San Francisco. A billion human bodies abandoned in the dunes of Italy and France. The lost city of Galway, the lost city of Beijing, the lost city of Memphis. The Greenland arcologies reach for the sky. The Antarctic Riviera opens for the season. The Roman Sahara reconquers an empire of dust. The lost city of Zurich, the lost city of Islamabad, the lost city of Atlanta. And speaking of poems, that you look at them and you go, gosh, well, okay, I was not when I wrote this. This is called Anaphylaxis. Just like, you'll find out at the end. Well, not really the theme, more like a shock.
Oh, yeah.
Solitude, like water, was something he decided he needed more of, but when he went in search of it, he discovered that, like potable water, there seemed to be less of it about, as though there'd been a convention of thirsty hermits in the vicinity of his home, and they bottled all the silence. So he drove to the beach at midnight, found the remains of jellyfish, alien ghosts, an apocalypse of invertebrates whose stings lay in wait for him to make contact. He saw no people in this place where one time naked hundreds had posed for photographs, some drunk and freezing pink in the Irish summer dawn. He considered walking in the water in the dark, diluting himself like a poison on its current, out past the boys. By the time he got to Portishead, full of brine and tangled up in random junk from some rich waster's luxury island, he would himself be jet sand. But the sea was crowded too, and looking out into the galaxy, he found no reassurance. Every place was full. Even all the dark between the stars was matter now, not vacuum, trillions unlike anything he could begin to contemplate lived there. It was no good. He took off both his shoes and stepped into a jellyfish. And God, I'm an anaphylactic shock. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine died, and he was a musician, and his name was Derek, and I wrote this poem about him. He was in a lot of bands in Dublin, and well-known guy. Funeral song. One Saturday or Sunday afternoon, back when we, like everyone we knew, were young and poor and relatively light, we filled the rocker's corner of the foggy dew, Sean and Eamon, Colin, me and you, crossing the surnames of writers we liked, with lyrics from any old tune. Dostoevsky loses its flavour on the bedpost overnight. My aim is true. 2 decades on, I wake from a dream of a disc jockey spinning your song on KCRW Now, from Dublin, Ireland, live on the show. They played your last request as you rolled behind the velvet, going underground. The humour of it mystified the priest, the kind of man you'd not have had around. Everyone else applauded, some let wicked laughter out, and others danced. You always could inspire an audience. After the service, Eamon whispered, "There goes the first to be gagged." And this is called The Forest. Were you to drop into a lake and let the water fill you, like some premature formaldehyde, or take a naked razor in the bath, or hang a sudden turn into a tram car as it pulled away, or crush a ton of sleeping pills, dissolve in gin, and sip the night in minutes. You could never quite explain it to your daughter when she was old enough to understand the truth of what you've done. So let whatever happens, happen. Soon enough for anyone it does. Let nature and caprice become the sniper no one sees, but in whose sights we all await our inexplicable release. One day you observe yourself alone, walking that cold forest in your head. You never hear the shot. The weapon is not found. Everything you ever were is buried under snow. Sooner than the seasons change, there is no trace of you at all. You are what's forgotten by the ones who do not know they have forgotten. Didn't say it was going to be cheerful. We've got some time for a few more, I think. This is the closing poem from the Darwin Vampires. It's called Gloria Mundi. In that recurring future memory, I push out from the capsule's open hatch, my Mercury recalling Alan Shepard's. Snug within a precious suit, I'm paid out on the tether line that tautens until, breaking tensile limits, it whips free, unleashing an infinity in which I feel no terror. Rather, lost in wonder at the sky, I find a liberation in accepting that I'll die out here. There's nowhere I would rather die. Moreover, beatifically mislaid between the moon and Cape Canaveral, I revel in being utterly alone, elated in my wakelessness, the last breath in my lungs expelled to hush a fragile wisp from that frail atmosphere of bygone earth above where nature ever dared to blow. The flower of an astral ghost, my final exhalation leaves a shrinking mist upon the glass. Embalmed by space and gliding out of orbit, now descending to cremation by re-entry, I desire within my reverie to settle on the solar wind and float serenely far beyond Centauri. We're getting to the 35-minute mark. I'm going to read one more poem, and it's a bit long, but it's only a couple of minutes, so it's called In Recess. Prologue. Prologue. Talk, as I and friends from Belfast celebrated in the Screen Road House, was of a World Cup game and little else. But at 10 that night, Sky News cut in. 6 mown down in Lochan Island, overshadowed areas rain. An out-of-season trick-or-treat, called out rounds in a public house, a whole half day and more before your parents started back. Sunday passed with hangovers, a trip to Mother Redcap's. You had said you'd phone on Monday morning. Anna Reardon called. Your father and your mother in a car crash in recess. The incident. The driver of the other car, the fire brigade cutting equipment. The passengers saved your mother for the ambulance. Your father, but she was dead on arrival. So said the reports, and in the Star, I saw a colour photograph, the cars, Honda Civic, Ford Sierra, crushed like empty foil wrap. You had woken to the doorstepping of news hounds on the scent of blood. The evening press was staking out your family home at dawn. The radio had broadcast names before the youngest son had heard. In the hallway, grown men shook. You took frail hands into your own. In the garden, people meeting for the first time in however long continued to pose questions begun on the phone. Removal to the Sacred Heart. The priest praised their success in business as in family, twin accomplishments of those on whom the church confers its grace. His words on the public address like a broadcast from beyond, although the coffins were still on their gurneys. Moments from now, they will be raised on the shoulders of those who have loved them, those who will carry them out. Shangana Cemetery. As we lounge the drive inside the gates, awaiting two Fannigan hearses, another funeral, we watched a small procession follow a black Mercedes in the back seat of which two men in dark suits rested across their laps the white coffin of a child. Lost chant. The world is passing into recess. Love is always passing into grief. Grief is always passing into mourning. Morning always passing into day. Day is always passing into evening. Evening always passing into night. Night is always passing into morning. Morning always passing into day. Day is always passing into evening. Evening always passing into night. Night is always passing into morning. Redemption. On a dresser in your home, I see a photograph. Four children ranked beside the two whose faces I expect to fade by a silver nitrate exorcism in a horror film. The voodoo has been made. The stricken are not saved. And I can have no faith or offer comfort but to say that after life, their particles are free to form a new relationship with nature. Photons and electrons making nuclear dances with the earth. Deeper than the sex that made you live, her atoms will connect with his atoms will connect with hers. Redemption in a law of physics. Energy can never be created or destroyed. It can only be transformed.